Your body was built for pleasure. It was made for it. In fact, your pleasure, your desire, and your body, in all of its wisdom, are sources of immense power. That's why I am now pre-enrolling for my soon-to-be-released online course live called Power in Pleasure, Reconnecting with Your Hunger, Desire, and Joy. If you want to get on the wait list to hear more when the course is enrolling, you can do that at dawnsarah.com/pleasure course, all one word, pleasure course. Early birds will get a special bonus module that won't be available anywhere else. There's no commitment to join and to sign up for the course. This is just so that you can get on that early bird list and to learn more about when the pleasure course is released. It's going to be a multi-week online course done in community with live calls, exercises that make you shiver, quiver, and sigh with delight, and so much more. So head to dawnsarah.com/pleasure course to learn more. You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode. I am so looking forward to releasing that pleasure course that you heard about at the top of the show. It's something that I've been thinking about for many months, but when I went to the ASDA conference in Portland, I talked to so many people who were so hungry for a course that helped people to connect with their pleasure and to find their way to the erotic and to express their desire, especially people who were coming out of eating disorder recovery. And so this course is going to be exactly that. I'm so excited. So again, if you didn't hear the ad at the beginning, you can go to dawnsarah.com/pleasure course, all one word, and check out a few details and get on the early bird notification list today. This episode actually comes out of a connection that I made at the ASDA conference. Aaron Flores was one of the speakers at the conference, and he is someone that I have been following for quite a while. I admire his work so much. And what really caught my eye is he just launched a men's body trust course that's all about helping men to reconnect with their bodies, their vulnerability, their feelings, their pleasure, and like really kind of confronting the ways that diet culture and masculinity myths and toxic masculinity can impact the body. And that is so much of what we talk about on this show. I mean, when we talk about sex and we talk about relationships, when we talk about being connected to other human beings and orgasms and masturbation, all of that has to do with how we feel in our bodies. If our bodies aren't working the way that they used to, and we have feelings about that, if we have acquired a disability, if we have shame around the ways that our genitals look or the ways that we achieve orgasm, all of that impacts the ways that we experience pleasure and the people in our lives. And so developing that body trust is such a crucial part of sex and ecstasy and joy and pleasure. And so getting to really talk to Aaron this week was, oh God, it was so good. I could have literally talked to him for hours. And as you hear, we get really excited at the end of the show. He is for sure coming back on the show in a couple of months. So let me tell you a little bit about Aaron, and then we will jump right in. Aaron Flores is a registered dietitian nutritionist based out of Los Angeles, California. With nearly 10 years of experience, Aaron has worked with eating disorders in a variety of settings. A large part of his career was spent working at the VA, Greater Los Angeles Healthcare System, where he helped develop and launch one of the first binge eating disorder programs to help veterans struggling with this disorder. Since leaving the VA, Aaron has continued to work in the eating disorder community, helping run groups and providing individual counseling to adolescents and adults. He currently works part-time at Center for Discovery and part-time in his private practice in Calabasas, California. He's a certified body trust provider, and his main areas of focus are intuitive eating and health at every size. In his work, Aaron helps individuals learn how to make peace with food and develop body positive behaviors. His work has been featured during Weight Stigma Awareness Week and blogs for the National Eating Disorder Information Center and National Eating Disorder Association. Aaron is a frequent speaker, as you'll hear in this interview, and has presented at the 2016 and 2017 Binge Eating Disorder Awareness Annual Conference and the upcoming 2018 International Conference on Eating Disorders. Along with his work on eating disorders, he is also a co-host of the podcast Dietitians Unplugged. So here is my rich, delicious chat with Aaron Flores, all about men's body trust and porn and food and diet culture and so many other things that tie into our pleasure and our experiences of each other. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Aaron. I am very much looking forward to our conversation today.
Oh, me as well. I'm really excited to that you invited me on, and I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Yay! You do some really awesome work in the world. I had a chance to see you speak at ASDA, and I've listened to your podcast and seen you on other people's rad podcasts like Summer Inanen. And you work at the nexus of our relationships to food and body trust and diet culture. Yeah, you're having some really important big conversations. So where I'd love to start that I think listeners would be super interested in, because I'm really eager to get Laura Dodsworth on the show, is you went through body trust certification, which I start next month for the next cohort.
No way.
Yes.
Oh my God, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm super excited. For one of your assignments, you had the opportunity to look through Manhood, which is Laura Dodsworth's book that features 100 pictures of people's penises and then like their associated stories. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear a little bit how that was for you to kind of like approach the project and what kind of got revealed as you were kind of swimming in this circle of like body trust work and then really kind of being confronted by like manhood and bodies.
Yeah. Well, so part of the body trust certification is a 6 month, if you do it sort of like in succession, it's basically around 6 months of work, of different assignments and different readings. And one of the required things to do is to do 2 book reviews. And what's really amazing with Hillary and Dana at Be Nourished, who are, you know, doing the certification, is that they want to make sure that you read a book that comes from a marginalized voice within the eating disorder or body image community. And so I knew I wanted to do a book around men and body image. And it took me a long time to sort of find one. And eventually Dana sent me a link to this book, Manhood. And I was like, this looks perfect. And it would be something would be really great to read. And it was the very last assignment I did. So I kept it sort of on my shelf. And I actually like on my dresser. It was on my dresser where I get dressed every day. And it sat there. And I did everything else, right? I did all my other book reviews. We had to write website copy, ethical statements, manifestos, all this other really deep work. And I saved this for last. And I wish I could say, because I knew it was going to be the best thing, I really saved it for last because I was really scared to do it. Mm. And when I wrote my book review for them, I basically said, like, there's a reason this is last, is because I think this book challenged my masculinity. I felt like, could I take this book to Starbucks and go read it? And what would people think of me if, you know, they look over my shoulder and there's a picture of a penis? And so there was some shame there that I was experiencing. There was also, just like my own, shame and bias about like, what does this mean about my sexuality, right? To read a book about, to look at a penis and to read a man's story about it. So, I mean, it confronted a lot of things for me. And then what I finally like knew, I just got to start doing this or else I will never finish the body trust work. And I wanted to finish the body trust work. And I read the first story, and the first story is, or first vignette, I don't know how, what you want to call them, right? But first essay is about an older man. And what I remember most is he talked about how he considers himself an intersectional feminist. And as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, this book is right for me, you know, because the other part was that I think I'm happy I saved it for last, because the book really did culminate and sort of bring to a head so many of the things that I had worked on with Hillary and Dana in this body trust work to help me feel more embodied. Like, I don't know if I could have challenged my biases as well as if I had done this work earlier, read the book earlier in this work. So I'm very thankful that I did save it for the end, and it was an amazing book. What I really just am so thankful for is, you know, they captured a really diverse group of men and trans men and, you know, different disabilities and abilities, different body types, different you know, races, different ages. It was, you know, for 100, if you looked at sort of to sort of demographic wise, it really captured a pretty representative sample of our society. And it was done in England, so like, you know, I think there's a lot of little like sort of little language differences, right, for how they slang for the word penis. It's actually pretty funny, but I feel like it captured a lot of, you know, what I would, a representative population for where the book was written.
Mm-hmm. What an incredible gift to be kind of nudged into that discomfort and then to find like this was meant to happen at this time and I'm ready to receive what's in this. And I love how you grappled with it. Like, that's just so real.
Yeah, no. It just sort of all coalesced really nicely. And I think what was nice is each story or vignette essay had what, you know, some were about like men losing their virginity. Some were about like how they tie their masculinity to how they perform in bed. Some were, you know, more about like aging and sort of if they weren't able to perform sexually as well, like what that meant for their manhood or like they used to as when they were younger. And some were just about, you know, like being comfortable with the size, right? Or being comfortable with what it looks like, or, you know, that how much body image played into just the discussion of someone's penis.
Yeah.
You know, and it really like cut to the core of like being like comparing and judging and is this right? Is this wrong? Does it fit within a norm? Is it outside the norm? Really just interesting stuff that came up just through a very personal discussion around penises.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is so important that you just named is this comparison that all of us are trapped in one variety or another, or
yes,
almost all of us, you know, and that comparison shows up in different ways depending on culture and gender and a number of other things. But, you know, I think especially for men, so many of the questions that I've gotten over the years have been around fear about their penis size and fear about performance and, you know, kind of comparing a body to, you know, kind of the pop culture edition or the porn edition of bodies. And I'd love to hear a little bit more. I know you just started your men's body trust program last week, and by the time this airs, you'll be a few weeks into it. So can you just talk a little bit about the ways that you see shame show up for men, and then what it means for men to cultivate body trust?
Yeah. Well, first off, I think, you know, this, what I see for shame when it comes to men is this, is that the pressure to have a body that fits the societal norm is very profound for men. And I think the shame comes from two things. One is that norm exists and that pressure exists. And then additionally, number two is that there's not really a space or forum or it is acceptable to discuss it. So, you know, men are experiencing this body dissatisfaction or comparison or feeling like, you know, my body doesn't fit it doesn't have a six pack. It's not, you know, ripped enough, it's not thin enough, whatever it is. But then adding this layer of not being able to sort of have an outlet for it makes that shame even stronger. And it makes it internalized so deep that to do any of this work is very challenging on some level, because it's, for some men, it might not have ever been really done. And so what I'm finding in sort of doing this group, but also just other conversations with men, is that the discomfort with the body is been there. And for many men has been there from a very early age, and without a space to sort of process it, it just goes through cycles of internalized stigma that never provide any space for healing.
So what for you does healing the relationship with body look like, especially for men?
So I think it's a couple things. I think it's learning to just accept our bodies as they are. And not having this, I think we can argue or sort of discuss the need to change the body down the road. But I think at first, can we just accept this is the body I have? Mm-hmm. And you know, especially as men age, I think the thing that comes up is it's not, my body doesn't perform like it did when I was 18.
Yeah.
So if I was at all athletic at that age, I can't do the same things that I want to do at 45 or 55 or 65 or 35 even, right? Our bodies age. So it's that acceptance that this is the process of my body. I think the other part of the healing is understanding that it does not challenge our masculinity to be vulnerable. And so to share our lived experience and be vulnerable to our partner, a friend, a coworker, someone that we feel is close to us, that to be vulnerable does not mean we are any less of a man. And I would say the third part is understanding that doing this work and trying to sort of doing this work so that we can heal, like how we see our body and being more comfortable with it, does not mean you have to love it. It just means, like I said earlier, it's about acceptance, and it's about not letting the body image issues stop us from doing important things in our life that help us live wholeheartedly.
I think that's such an important point because, I mean, I can't speak to the experience of men, but I can speak to my experience, which is how many decades I told myself that story of, well, I'll finally do that thing when I'm in a different body, and just putting life on hold forever and just kind of having this like low grade dissatisfaction all the time because I wasn't really pursuing the things I wanted to do because I was always waiting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a human experience. I don't think that matters your gender or your gender identity. I think that's a human experience, is how many of us all put something on hold and wait for something because of especially our body and wanting to change our body before we do that thing. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned masculinity and how being vulnerable is not something that takes away from masculinity. And masculinity myths are rampant in our culture. And, you know, there have been so many brilliant, brilliant Black feminist women who have talked about how the first victims of patriarchy are men and boys, mm-hmm. and the ways that they're cut off from their emotions and their bodies and have to perform, you know, these very violent versions of humanity often. What kind of masculinity myths, you know, do you really grapple with and see? I know you wrote this beautiful letter to your son a couple of years ago, kind of inviting him into this dialogue around expectations and performance of masculinity. So what are some of those myths around upholding masculinity that you grapple with as you do this work around like bodies and being embodied and experiencing self and pleasure?
Well, I would say first off is personally the things that I struggle with are being able to, you know, I don't want to say this. I think, you know, doing podcasts like this and talking to people like you who understand this message and understand this work, it is very comfortable, right? And it feels really good to sort of have that connection. And what I find is that in my work life, that connection is really consistent and happens on a really regular basis. I would say exporting that into my personal life is, it's hard. Like there aren't many men that I talk to about this just on a, like on a personal level. And I think that's partly because, you know, I think socially, like some of my friends might not just quite get it on some level. But two, it's also like it's that vulnerability piece is something I butt up against, right? So I live that too. And it's funny when I find men that I can have this conversation with, it's really quite, it's really precious to me. And I know that it's unique, and I know that it like might not happen everywhere, but I find that when it does happen, it's just like this conversation with you, it feels really good. And it feels like I get to be seen by someone who is maybe not in the eating disorder community, which is nice. Like, and because it's like taking this sort of work and like putting it out in my life. So I think that's for sure. One thing is like just trying to, you know, bring that out into my social life and challenge that masculinity myth. And then the other thing that I think I do see it a lot around my kid, and I have twins, I have a boy and a girl twin, and I definitely just see how, you know, there are different, influences that come in that they see and that they sort of experience, and learning to sort of like see, like sort of almost deconstruct that and say, okay, where, like, how can I talk about this experience with both my son and my daughter from a perspective that sort of challenges maybe the narrative or myth that they're already learning as kids. So, you know, it's interesting because as they grow up and they're almost teenagers now, is, you know, you see it in a much different way than when they were, you know, 4 and 5 or even younger than that.
What are the, so one of the things that I have found in the work that I've been doing is that so much of this work around sex and pleasure and desire and love and the ways we connect with each other, you know, really does impact the ways we connect with ourselves and our bodies. And there's a lot of grief work that has to happen. We have to grieve the stories that we invested in. We have to grieve the ways that we performed and weren't really present in our life. And there's just grief and sometimes anger and fear that comes up when we really start asking these questions and trying to rewrite stories. And what are some of the ways that that you see kind of like big emotional work happening, especially around men's body trust?
Well, look, first let me say you're going to love this body trust work already because you're using all the great keywords that you're going to learn about. So you are definitely finding your people. So welcome.
Yay! Yeah.
So, you know, I think the word pleasure is a really important word. And you know, up till around, I would say about a month ago, I would probably also call it satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And we actually did, there was a body trust symposium while we were in Portland for ASDA. And we talked a lot about pleasure. And it's interesting because I think we, and especially men, I think it is interesting how we sort of define pleasure, right? And define like self-care as mm-hmm. pleasure. And I think one of the, you know, just to sort of bring back in the manhood book, because it relates to this a little bit, is what was interesting is that so many of the stories that men wrote involved pornography and involved, like, that is how they learned about pleasure and they learned about sex through pornography. And to me, that was really interesting because that is, you know, that especially like now, I mean, I think that is perpetuating rape culture in our young men. And so we're learning about pleasure from a very almost violent perspective when it comes to sex. And I think for men, I think learning to distinguish between pleasure, like thinking of it as like hedonistic, mm-hmm. to pleasure as what brings me joy, like what helps me feel connected, what helps me feel in the moment. And what's interesting, I have some friends that are like avid surfers, and I always think of like surfing as like, I think there's definitely a masculine culture within surfing, right?
Yeah.
But I think I also think of surfing as like being really connected, you know, and like, right. Listen, I don't surf. I wish I could surf. But like, I sort of see that as like being on a wave is like really joyful, mm-hmm. you know? And I think for a lot of men, like we sort of maybe don't, we struggle with finding like, what are the things in life that really bring us joy and maybe even changing, like, again, how we define that word pleasure to say, like, this is what helps me feel joy right now. Mm-hmm. I think that's it's an interesting sort of change in definition that I don't think many men might go for or think of.
You spend 1/3 of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable while you do it. And let's not forget all of the other time that we spend on our mattresses, reading, cuddling, and delighting in our bodies in a number of other ways. Casper is a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest one night at a time. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce, because we need a little sink and a little bounce. On top of that, I hate being too hot when I'm sleeping, and Casper's breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. Casper products are cleverly designed to mimic human curves, providing supportive comfort for all kinds of bodies, which we love. Plus, Casper also offers a wide array of other products like pillows and sheets to ensure an overall better sleep experience. Even better, Casper has hassle-free returns if you're not completely satisfied. They deliver right to your door in a small, how did they do that, sized box. And this makes my newly Canadian heart happy. They offer free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. So get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/SGR and using SGR at checkout for Sex Gets Real. Terms and conditions apply. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. So if you're ready for a sleep product that offers the right amount of sink and bounce, get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/SGR and using SGR at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. I love that so much. That's so much of the work that, you know, I've been doing here on the podcast the past couple of years specifically is, like, how can we broaden the definitions and release the reins a little bit? That's kind of forcing so many of us to feel either broken or like we're performing so that we can, you know, fit in or feel like we're doing the right things. And like, when we can broaden our definitions of sex to include all kinds of erotic exchanges, it gives us so many more entry points as our bodies do change or, you know, acquire disabilities or move through illness or age. And the same with pleasure. Like, when we can expand pleasure beyond, you know, those like decadent meals we have at birthdays and holidays and sex and maybe one or two other things, to the potential for like hundreds of small and big access points to joy and embodiment and just being utterly present, that feels so much more rich to me. But, you know, we have this kind of tendency to cling to, you know, so many of the stories that we've been given, which is that pleasure is a very specific thing and it's easiest to get through this one act. And I love the invitation of, what if we open ourselves to pleasure being joy and presence and attunement and like, just really, really what does feel good in the moment. I mean, that feels so much more accessible.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, you bring up, when you said the word erotic, it reminded me of when I did my body trust retreat, Lucy Appermore was there, and she's a dietitian who is in Manchester, UK, and she is also a poet and does like amazing work around spoken word. And she gave us this 2-hour lecture on, I think it was called The Erotic. And like, I'm sitting in there, I'm the only man in this group. And I'm like, this is going to be the most uncomfortable 2 hours of my entire life. Like, you know, and like, I just had visions of like, you know, like, what are we going to talk about? Like, and just feeling like, you know, again, just really uncomfortable. Like, is this going to be a 2-hour sex talk? And I'm the only man amongst these women. And, it's exactly what you just said. It's about like, the erotic is about embodiment and, you know, and sort of being attuned and all those things. And I think what I had to challenge myself with, and I think this is what a lot of men have to challenge themselves with, is like turning off the 4th grade mind that we have that like, that needs to giggle at the word. Right. And then giggle at the word and like sort of make a joke and then, move on, because the topic is uncomfortable. And I think if we can sort of do that and really just sort of open our hearts and bodies and listen, is that, you know, we to change that definition, like, it opens a huge key. And I think it just involves, it just requires us to sort of, like I said, like, challenge that vulnerability, that fear of vulnerability, to just be present and listen and experience these things.
So first of all, I adore that. I adore that so much of like, oh shit, this is going to be awkward.
Yeah.
So like, as you've kind of, I don't know, done so much learning and working with others in this space, what is your relationship to like pleasure and the erotic become as your body has changed and as you've done all these trainings and you've worked with all these clients and created these programs? Like, where are you now in relationship to pleasure and sensual delights and joy? What's that like for you?
It's a really good question. And I think this is where my dietitian, like, I want to disclose, right, that this is part of the fault of my training as a dietitian and the work is what we do as dietitians, is that we're not having these types of discussions in our work, right? We're talking a lot about, you know, what does folate do and blah, 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 right? which is important. But like, you know, I think the reason I want to bring this up is because we're not trained to do our own work in this area, especially around food and body. Mm-hmm. And what I think started with, you know, a long time ago, reading intuitive eating first and doing a lot of sort of personal work in that area, learning about health at every size, doing some personal work in that area, doing the body trust certification and really diving deep into my own embodiment before working with other people, is to say that I am a complete work in progress. Hmm. And I've, you know, through this work in body trust, I opened up that, like, hey, you need your own space to do this work. And you need to, you know, seek out people that you can talk to help you do this work, because unless you are, you're really just paying lip service to it. And so I want to say that out loud, that like, I do a lot of my own work in this area, and it ebbs and flows. What I find though is that through this process, it's almost like there are times where I take a mental picture of a moment. And for me, it's like not about like getting out my phone and Instagramming it or putting it like on Facebook, but like, I want to remember this. Like, I want to file this somewhere in my brain, and I want to file like what it feels like, what it smells like, right? What it tastes like. And what I find is that, I look for experiences in my life that lead to those moments. Mm-hmm. And honestly, a lot of them are around my family. When I get to spend time with my partner and with my kids, and we're doing something, even if we're not all together, but like, we're just doing it sort of, as a unit, right? It, those are moments where I want like that mental snapshot, right? Or like a conversation with one of my kids, right, is a mental snapshot. Having a great moment with a client, is a mental snapshot. I find that I'm trying to cultivate pleasure and like things that really make me feel in the moment, and really trying to like catalog those almost, as experiences. And I think just to be honest, the things that I really try to work on are, I'm going to take time out from my family, from work, and just do something for me. Hmm. And that's it is a struggle. It's hard. I will say that this summer was a great sort of experience with that. My family, my wife, is a camp director. She was gone all summer. My kids go to summer camp. They were gone all summer. I had 2 months to myself, pretty much. And I don't like being alone. So I was actually very anxious about it. But what I found is that it sort of forced me to, there were many days where I was like, if you don't get up off the couch, you're going to sit here all day, and like, you will have done, you know, you just went, we sat here all day. And, mm-hmm. and I was like, no, I'm going to go out and do something like that. And this is what I'm going to go do. And, you know, I sort of had these little, experiences that they were all just for me, and it felt really good. So I think it's continuing to work on like saying, hey, this is my time and this is what I'm going to do to sort of just for me. Mm-hmm. And realizing that it's not always gadgets that do it, right? It's got to be an experience.
Yeah. So speaking of experiences, you posted, I believe it was around the 4th of July, saying, like, I'm having some complicated feelings about independence in the United States right now. But you decided to go to the beach, and you kind of wrote about your experience of wearing a tank top, specifically in LA. And I come from Southern California. That's where my family is. Yeah. So I totally get it. And I'd love to hear just a little bit about, you know, I think we hear lots about women, especially in BOPO spaces, you know, and I have a story like this too, where like, I didn't wear dresses for 15 years because I thought, as someone who's in a fat body, I'm not allowed to. And the first time I did, it was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life, but I lived, and now I wear dresses all the time. But kind of those moments of like, I have to push up against stories or fear. And you had posted about like going to the beach and wearing a tank top. So can you talk a little bit about kind of some of the ways that you are really combating stories that were given about bodies, and how you take up space and kind of say like, no, I deserve to do this, or I'm going to do this thing that feels a little bit edgy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is, so that experience was, it was like during the summer, right, when everyone's gone, and I would normally have spent that holiday with my family. And, you know, there I was choosing to do it, you know, alone. I did have other sort of invitations, but here I wanted to go to the beach, and I just wanted to just experience it, you know, on my, you know, sort of on my own agenda. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the things that I find is the most sort of overt, I don't want to say this, overt manifestation of me trying to take up space is to say, you know, when I swim, I am allowed to take off my shirt and go swimming. And that is something that is, you know, fights or butts up against the sort of narrative that a lot of men feel, that if they don't have, you know, a body that fits or is of the norm, that you need to somehow cover it up, or people are going to stare at you. I mean, I think that's my story, right? People are going to, you know, sort of make up some story about me being fat and swimming.
Yeah.
And so for me, the radical moment is to say, I'm not going to do that. And if I choose to do it, it's okay. And it's maybe because I've had a lot of sun and I burn really easily. So, hey, I'm going to put on a shirt so I don't get sunburned. Or maybe I don't have the armor today to do that, right? But it's my choice. And I'm going to make that choice in the moment and feel comfortable with it either way. And what I find is that there is, especially like, you know, so wearing the tank top or like swimming without my shirt on or just sitting in a chair on a hot day without my shirt on. And you talk about pleasure, like it feels really good.
Mm.
Like, hey, I feel the sun on different parts of my body that don't usually feel it, you know, or I feel like the sensation of wind across my chest or across my shoulders or across my stomach.
Yeah.
I feel, it's cooler, you know, I'm not as hot, which is nice in the summer. And so it's sort of connecting to like, this actually, like there's some sensations that I can connect with that actually feel really good. And then sort of saying, you know what, whatever story someone is telling themselves about my body is their story and it's not mine. And so I'm going to listen to my story more than theirs. And then the other thing is, again, modeling for my kid. and both of my kids, right, to model that I can wear that, that, you know, this is my body. It doesn't make me any different of a father to them or a partner. It doesn't stop me from doing anything that might be enjoyable with them, and that I can be confident enough in my own skin to say I'm allowed to be here, right? And I'm allowed to do this, and so are you. And what's interesting is that's, you know, manifested in sort of positive ways for my kids. I think they, without even it being spoken, I think they see it.
Yeah. That modeling is so important.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I really appreciate that distinction too, between the stories that other people might be telling about my body aren't my story. And I'm going to focus on my story right now. And that permission, because I think so many of the men who have written into the show before have this intense fear about the story that other people are going to tell about their penis size or their body shape and what that means about their value, and kind of recognizing, like, people are going to make assumptions about our bodies. That's just kind of the world we live in right now because of diet culture and, you know, sexism and all the other things. And we get to tell stories about our bodies too, and then decide how we're going to behave based on which story we're choosing to listen to. And sometimes it's easier than others, but just kind of acknowledging, like, yeah, they might tell a story, but that's not the one I'm choosing for me right now. So I'm going to be shirtless. I'm going to enjoy this beach. And, like, they tell their stories and I have mine.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I think it goes back to just our experiences as we grow up and as we get socialized about bullying and just not being fit in. And especially for, you know, for men, I think it's like there's really intense at both emotional but also physical bullying when you don't, if you're anything different than what is deemed as, you know, masculine or normal. Right. So anything that deviates at all from that, that mm-hmm. brings attention to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if it's your body, you essentially get mocked and ridiculed for.
So kind of thinking about the ways that we are, you know, forced into conformity in a variety of ways, whether we're, you know, it's around our body or performing masculinity or femininity or any number of other things. You do so much work around, like, eating disorders and diet culture, and you have this wonderful logo that's on your business cards, Smash the Waitriarchy. And there are a lot of people who really get why talking about diet culture and bodies is a crucial part of having a healthy sexuality and having depth and sexual pleasure and connection to other humans. And then there's some people who don't quite get it. And so I'd love to talk to you about the ways that you see diet culture impacting our ability to really connect with and express desire and pleasure.
Oh, it's a great question. And again, I think this is why I'm so thankful to do this work, because, you know, when I became a dietitian, if someone had said, oh, you're going to get this question about pleasure and sex and diet culture, I'd be like, okay, that's not what I'm trained for. Right. So, like, I am so happy I'm here today. You know, because, okay. So here's what I think is that diet culture does something very impactful when it comes to pleasure. And what I think it does is it tells us that experiencing pleasure, especially from food, is wrong. And that if you experience too much pleasure from food, you will gain weight, you will be fat, and you are bad. So diet culture reinforces sort of maybe like what I would consider like a puritanical view around sex and says anything pleasurable is bad. And that, you know, we must do anything in our power to limit our pleasure around food. Because if we don't, we are inherently uncontrollable.
Yeah.
And this goes back to, Sylvester Graham and graham crackers, right? Sylvester Graham was, a pastor in the 19th century who talked about, basically thought that we needed to eat bland crackers to prevent hedonistic behavior, right? And that's who graham crackers are named after, Sylvester Graham. And so even for, hundreds of years, we've been taught that, or just had this notion that pleasure is bad, and pleasure from food is something that we need to have limits on and need to have structure around to limit ourselves. And it basically erodes our own trust in our hunger and fullness and satisfaction cues. And it says we are weak. We are, susceptible to pleasure, that as soon as we get a taste of any little bit, who knows what will happen to us. Yeah. And so I think diet culture reinforces this notion that we are not allowed to experience anything fun or pleasurable.
So much of what I'm hearing and that I've experienced on a very personal level too is the ways that diet culture really reinforces that we have to constantly be monitoring,
yes,
measuring, controlling, earning. And then when those things become too hard, we binge in some way, or just kind of have this big pendulum response, and then we feel guilt and shame and we double down and we'll do more controlling and more measuring and feel more guilt, and just the ways that it keeps us trapped and separate from actually just experiencing who we are and what we want and allowing kind of the natural ebb and flow to happen, because we're just so focused on the control.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I also think it's really interesting to just think about the ways that diet culture has indoctrinated pretty much all of us in Western culture into eroding that trust, as you mentioned, around our mm-hmm. cues. And I think that that's a really important thing to think about, both within the context of food, that we kind of have gotten to a place where we're terrified of just eating when we're hungry and eating what sounds like it would be good in that moment, because we have that terror of loss of control and hedonism, and how that ties to, ultimately that takes us very quickly to unlovable, alone forever, dying.
Right.
And also, the ways that that then ties to the ways we connect with other human beings, with our bodies. And if we don't know how to listen to our hunger cues and what we're hungry for, it's pretty hard to also listen to our desire cues in other ways. So what are the ways that I really want to be touched right now? What are the ways I want to relate with you? What are the ways we might get endlessly creative about the possibilities of where we overlap? And instead doing that performance of, I should do this, and this is how it should unfold, and I'm performing so that I can be good.
Absolutely. And I think the key word there is hunger for me, because there's when it's not just hunger for food, right? But it's hunger for so much in our life. And yeah, I think diet culture tells us hunger is something that you should not feel, and that the first sense of hunger cues, right, is for so many people who've been in diet culture for so long, is it's fearful.
Yeah.
And it's scary. And I don't, the last thing I want to feel is hungry. So I'm going to eat in a way or restrict so much so that those cues are either gone or I never experience them at all, because to feel hunger is mm-hmm. inherently scary.
Yeah.
When we have hunger for so many things, as a metaphor, right? And I think we need to embrace that hunger, and really listen to it.
Yeah. And that hunger, it is such a, I kind of imagine that hunger as the center of a wheel with all these spokes that go out you know, of like hunger for food,
exactly,
hunger for touch, hunger for connection, hunger to be seen, hunger for feeling, and being able to feel openly and have that met. And then when we get to each of those things, they butt up against so many of these big cultural myths we have around things like masculinity. You know, if I'm hungry for touch, but masculinity tells me to be touched by certain people and in certain ways means I'm failing as a man, then I'm going to cut myself off from that. I'm still hungry for touch, but there's a lot of pressure now on these very few ways that I can get it.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have one last question for you, and it's kind of a heady one. So I love that you're doing all of this work, specifically around like men and body trust, because that is such a missing piece of the conversation within body positivity and diet culture talk and fat activism. You know, it's pretty much about like women and queer folks. And so like, we need more spaces for men to be able to talk and process and experience and feel when it comes to all the ways they've been cut off from their bodies. And there's also a very real experience that for so many women, the violence that they experience because of diet culture, which is so tied to sexism and misogyny, is perpetuated by men upholding masculinity. And so I'm wondering how you kind of navigate that space of inviting men in and at the same time having eyes wide open about the very real impact of like the privilege that comes with masculinity.
Well, I think you just touched on it right there. And that's being able to name privilege and to really pull out and zoom out. I think part of the reason that especially someone like me, who's a straight, white, cisgendered man, might have trouble coming to this work is because it might be the first time we're acknowledging the privilege that we have in this world and that we've navigated this world in a way where we've never been challenged and we've never been really uncomfortable and we've never really known what it feels like to be marginalized in any way. So as soon as we feel something that's uncomfortable, like confronted with misogyny, sexism, patriarchy, any of those things, we automatically put up maybe some defense mechanisms because we don't know what it feels like to be confronted in that way. Mm. So I think it's important to discuss what privilege is and bring in these topics when it comes to bodies. And I don't think you can do body image work without talking about patriarchy and without talking about sexism and without talking about race and without talking about social justice. I think, you know, we can all do it in different ways, but I think it has to be a part of the conversation somehow. And what I find is that, you know, by being able to name part of it or all of it in this work and why it might be hard for us, some men to do this work is important. And I think I can use my privilege to talk about these topics, maybe in a way where it might be more accessible to men, right? So that I can maybe bridge the gap on some level and make these topics more accessible. And that's my hope, right? But I do think we need to address our privilege and we do need to address how, you know, really like toxic masculinity is a part of our society and the role that it plays.
The role that it plays in not only creating so much violence against women and queer folks and especially trans women, but also the violence against men themselves. Like
absolutely.
You mentioned earlier, you know, all the bullying that happens, that's toxic masculinity.
Yes.
In a large part, you know, boys policing each other in order to feel like they're living up to all the things that they're swimming in.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. And again, that's, you know, listen, if that's, whether you're a teenager who's experiencing it or an adult. I mean, that is heady work. And I think that is maybe the challenge for some men, is like diving in and saying like, this is going to be heady. We are going to talk about topics that, that are challenging. But when we do, and we sort of process them, it's going to reap huge rewards in terms of a body image.
Yeah.
And the relationships that we have with others.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, I think it might have been Sonali Rashatwar that really like connected the dots for me first a couple of years ago, where she was talking about like racism happens to our bodies, and the violence of patriarchy, you know, it happens to our bodies, and you know, lack of access for folks with disabilities, it prevents our bodies from being in spaces. And so, like, you know, these kind of like big systems of oppressions exist by the ways that they impact our bodies. And then, you know, at a very personal level, the way that I move through my life, the way that I experience sex, the ways that I experience touch and love and pleasure, that has to happen with my body. And so, you know, they are so intimately linked, and being able to really start seeing all the ways that those impact each other, I think gives us so many more opportunities for connection and depth, because we start understanding the ways that all of us are moving through the world in such complicated ways.
And perfectly said, right? It is complicated. It's nuanced, and it's, there are a lot of intersections there, and we need to sort of look at all of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could literally talk to you forever, but in the interest of respecting your time and the listener's time, I'll just have to have you back another time. So for folks who want to stay in touch.
I would do it. You just tell me when. I would do it.
Okay, good. I'm in. So for people who want to learn more about the work you do, maybe keep an eye out for the next time you're running your men's body trust program down the road, how can they find you online?
Well, so you mentioned my new logo. So I actually like bought that URL. So you can now find me at smashthewaitriarchy.com. And you can also find me on Instagram at Aaron Flores, RDN. And that's my same handle on Facebook and Twitter. I'm probably less active on Twitter these days, more on Instagram and Facebook. But those are probably the best ways. And then I also co-host a podcast called Dietitians Unplugged that is on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and every place you would listen to your podcast.
Excellent. Well, I will have links to all of those places in the show notes and at sexgetsreal.com for this episode. Aaron, thank you so much for being here with us and geeking out with me.
Oh my God. Thank you for having me. And I think I want to come back on your show, if that's okay, when you're done with the body trust work and your course, and we can like totally talk.
Heck yes. I would love that. To everybody who tuned in, thank you so much for being here with us. If you have any questions that you'd like me to field on the show down the road, please go to sexgetsreal.com and use the send a note link. Of course, Patreon supporters, don't forget, if you support at $3 and above, you get weekly bonus content. You can go to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to either support the show or to hear the bonus content. Aaron and I are about to go record that bonus chat just for you. So until next time, this is Dawn Sarah with Aaron Flores. Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the Vocal Few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love is supposed to be.